Chapter 28 Wraiths. A young Babylonian woman with a baby in her arms stood in front of Roy. Dark brown eyes stared at the priest, but her lips were pinched and her gaze kept darting to the boy at his mercy. She was oblivious to the presence of the man in the blue uniform nearby. Tentatively, trying to pretend his hand was not shaking, Roy reached out and brushed the sharp edge of her shoulder. His fingers drifted straight through, sensing heat and life, but nothing as solid as flesh or bone. What? His voice sounded weak and strained as he recoiled, and his whirling thoughts kept returning to settle on one word. Ghosts. It was a ridiculous notion, like something out of a childhood horror story. As if there were such things as phantoms that haunted the place of their deaths. But what other explanation was there? Reza nudged a tall, burly man with the muzzle of her gun, frowning when the weapon met no resistance. She carefully holstered her revolver and reached out to touch the man's temple. Like Roy, she made contact with nothing but vapor, and her brown eyes widened in alarm. Al hunkered down beside a little boy of maybe 6 years old. He looked closely, thoughtfully, but did not reach out and see if the boy was real. Instead, he watched the boy chase his sister around and around his mother's skirts, only to give a soft cry of horror as he tripped and fell right through Al's outstretched hands to sprawl on the floor. There were tears from the boy, as real as anything Roy had ever seen. His mother's soft reassurances and gentle kisses and sympathy were a universal constant of loving parents everywhere. But everything, from the city in all its dusk-filled glory to the moon overhead, was a lie. The only thing that linked this place to the ruins in which they had been standing was the smooth outline of the array, curving unnoticed beneath the people's feet. Ed's left hand brushed against Roy's palm, fingers twining in his grip, warm and real as he gave a quick squeeze of reassurance before letting go. "It's a collective memory," he said, his voice so logical and matter-of-fact that it was hard to remain locked in befuddled half-fear. The alchemy that created the gate imprinted what happened within the array. When we walked into the square, we triggered it. The design was originally used to draw in the energy needed to put the gate together. He grimaced. It took it straight from the people who used to live here. "What will it do to us?" Al asked, standing up and peering through the crowd's feet as he tried to get a better look at the circle in which they stood. "The same thing?" An uncomfortable expression crossed Ed's face as he let out a heavy sigh. "I don't think so. It's different now than it was back then. Maybe some of the lines have worn away and affected the way it works. Or perhaps only the priest could control when it drained the energy away. We're probably safe." "Forgive me, Edward," Hawkeye said firmly, "but I would have liked a more definite answer to that question. I don't think it's wise for us to stay here and find out what happens." She was already striding through the crowd toward the design's edge, automatically squeezing between figures even though she could have walked straight through them if she wished. Her course took her to the circumference close to the altar, not far from where the priest stood. As soon as she tried to cross the outer edge of the array, the air pulsed, booming like a wave hitting the side of a boat. Hawkeye was forced back as the lines flashed a warning. The Babylonians remained oblivious as Roy swore softly, hearing the unspoken message with ease. They were trapped in this time and place until the alchemy deigned to release them. He knew that, if they persisted in their attempts to escape, the next attack would not be so harmless, and he had no wish to lose anyone to Babylon's past. "I don't think it will hurt us," Ed said quietly. "Just wait it out." He glanced up at the sky as if trying to judge the passage of time. It won't be long.
My children!
The priest's cry rang across the square as if he had been waiting for Ed's cue, and the babbling rush of whispers calmed to silence as the crowd stopped to listen. There was a hungry desperation in the air, but it was coming from the people, not the alchemy. They hung on the man's every word as if he was their savior, and, as he began to speak, Roy realized that the priest had styled himself as such.
I, Thakir, have given you so much. I gave our great city life, bringing precious water into our desert realm. Now, in our time of need, I vowed to find a solution.
He spread his arms wide and lifted his face to the sky, drawing in a deep breath of the balmy air like a man reveling in his moment.
For months, terrors have torn apart our homes. Unnatural fires have burned the sand to glass, and winds have thrown themselves against our walls. The very ground has sought to topple our towers. Now, at last, I have found the answer, and I have appealed to our great ruler, King Kaleo, for his aid.
Lying fucker, Ed hissed at Roy's side. Kaleo and Carmine tried to escape. They were never consulted about anything. They were given orders.
They didn't think the plan would work.
Gold eyes flashed in the darkness, and Roy could feel the taut, angry tension pouring off of Ed.
They didn't want to give a little boy's life for it. Can't exactly blame them. This whole thing was caused by Thakir using alchemy. Why should it be Kaleo's life to pay for the cure?
Roy focused on the priest again, trying to view what was happening as an unbiased spectator. He could not help the sickly, creeping sense of disgust. There was too much glory and very little honesty. Thakir was feeding the people of Babylon a desperate hope, but even Roy could see that they were reluctant to take it. Around him, men and women kept glancing at their young king and his bound mother, hemmed in by the grim prospect of the guards. They knew something was amiss, and he could feel their unease like a breath of cold air on the back of his neck.
For centuries, the royal family have protected us and served us with their lives. Now, the king, in all his courage and wisdom, has agreed to sacrifice himself for the sake of the city. With his blood, the powers that rack our world will be appeased. With his blood, we shall enter a new era of peace and prosperity.
Bullshit, Ed spat. He's just telling them what they want to hear. He knows what's going to happen. The only one who's going to walk out of here alive is him. A quick, malicious smile crossed Ed's lips, and he nodded towards Carmine. At least, that's what he thinks. The crowd was too distracted and Thakir too lost in his rapture to notice one of the guards unlock the woman's chains and murmur something in her ear. Was that a brush of a kiss to her temple? It was impossible to tell from this distance, and Roy doubted that she had even noticed. Her eyes were focused sharp and hard on the priest, and as he lifted this sharp splinter of a knife, she lunged for him, her rage finding voice in a chilling scream of fury. Like a spark thrown into a powder keg, the unrest of the crowd was given life. Women cried out as the men shouted, all of them giving voice to their doubts as Thakir lunged, bringing the metal down across Kaleo's throat in one clean, deep slice. He followed the cut through, bending towards the ground and brushing both sets of fingers against the stone of the platform, smearing blood over something that no one could see. Roy felt it, a deep, hard thud like cannon fire as the alchemy began to build. Everyone else was oblivious, too wrapped up in the struggle in front of them to notice what was happening beneath their sandaled feet. Thakir gave a cry of pain as Carmine grappled for the knife, cleaving the brutally sharp blade into his hand and slicing off a couple of fingers. It was too late, though. Kaleo lay dead on the altar, his blood giving life to an array that spanned the massive square, and trapping everyone in its embrace. The light flowed outward like liquid silver, picking out the design inch by inch as the alchemy rushed towards its climax. Silence knifed through the air, punctuated by one massive indrawn breath. Everyone dropped as if their legs had been cut out from under them, falling to the stone with a sickening thud as their lives were snuffed out. There had been no time to reach for loved ones, and no time to say a final goodbye. Every person in Babylon had been robbed of what was most precious to them. Life was gone. Al's choked-down sob of horror at the children who now lay dead at his feet made Ed break away from Roy's side, and he heard the older Elric mutter some form of comfort. Even Riza had her hand pressed over her mouth as if she were trapping her emotions behind her lips, swallowing them back as her eyes burned with fury and hurt. She had seen her fair share of battle, but Roy knew what she was thinking. These people weren't soldiers. They had not signed up for anything. They had not stepped out of their front doors tonight knowing that they would be risking their lives. Looking across the square, Roy forced himself to ignore the bodies and concentrate on the alchemy. It flared brightly, racing down the streets and touching every house, plucking at any life it found. The sheer amount of power it must have taken to start the array going was almost unimaginable. Even in his revulsion, he could still acknowledge that Thakir was a powerful man, far more so than most modern alchemists. Still, if the alchemy it took to ignite the array was remarkable, it was nothing compared to what it took to build the gate. Thakir used lives to fuel the alchemy, but Ed could not, would not, stoop to that level. How was he even going to begin? Just knowing the array was only the start. Getting it to work was a completely different story, and Roy wondered if Ed had thought that far ahead. Screams, not born from any human mouth, derailed his train of thought, and he looked around, tense and unsure. It was the wind tearing through the city, rushing towards the platform on which Carmine stood. She was shaking the priest's limp body in rage, sobbing uselessly. Behind her, the air blurred and gaped, stretching wide to show an opalescent silver plain. He knew without asking that the gate would be built there. Not in this world, but in a place nearby, a heartbeat away. The city roared, a living thing in terrible pain, as the buildings closest to the square crumbled to dust, flowing into the hole in a thick, gritty ribbon. Roy ducked, too caught up in the sights and sounds of this vision to have confidence that he would not be hurt by what was happening. Oil lamps spilt their contents, spreading lines of fire where the fuel hit the floor, and carried on burning, turning the humid night hellish. In the other plane, the stones reassembled, building themselves up into formidable pillars. Sculptures and engravings took shape in their bleak gray surface as the towering threshold climbed into being, looming over the world. Another explosive sound rocked the square as the doors flew into being, lines scored across the grain of the wood in the shape of an eye. They drifted open, revealing the shadows in their depths, and then, like a star going nova, there was light. It began as a tiny speck before spreading outwards, filling the frame with quicksilver. It looked how Roy imagined a device to be, unmaligned by anything human. Yet, even as the thought crossed his mind, he saw a tiny human silhouette, Kaleo. The boy was an integral part of the gate, and his very presence made sure that it would never be an untouched portal of energy. It would take on a life of its own, one that Carmine would only make richer and darker with her sacrifices. Roy glanced at Ed, seeing him tense and snarling at the image in front of him. He had seen what had happened in Babylon before, but that was not the source of his hatred. All his loathing was aimed at the gate itself. It had taken so much from him, stealing time and again and giving nothing in return. In his own way, Ed was like Kaleo, tied to the gate by repeated contact, linked to it as a host and constantly threatened by its presence. Abruptly, the bodies in the square vanished, leaving the four of them standing in an empty expanse of stone. Like dissipating mist, the view into the realm of the gate faded, and all that remained was Carmine, slumped on the stage, her shoulders shaking in dry sobs as silence settled over the city's grave. A noise like a finger around the rim of a crystal wine glass, sharp and high, rang through the air, and the darkness furled inwards, revealing sunshine and bringing back the heat of the desert day. Before their eyes, the stones aged, their edges softening with the passage of wind and sand, but the square remained, as did the array on its surface. Red light scorched the lines, and Roy did not even have time to flinch as the power rushed in towards them. Heat tore through him, jolting his heart and making him jerk in surprise, but it continued over him, surging faster and faster until it struck Ed's skin.
"Brother!"
Ed reeled, clutching his hands to his head as the lines and sigils flickered over his skin. They etched themselves across the honeyed canvas in dark ink before they began to fade, seeping inwards through flesh and bone. Without thinking, Roy grabbed at Ed's shoulders, supporting his weight as he shook, his teeth gritted tight to hold back the cries of pain that lodged in his throat. Roy could feel the frantic flutter and thud of Ed's heart, as if his whole body was a drum carrying the beat. The arrays on his forehead, arm, and chest were burning with light, standing out with diamond brilliance. Yet beneath them, on every revealed piece of skin, Roy could see, there were flowing lines and curves of alchemy. Faint, dusky gray turned in counterpoint against one another like clockwork behind glass, vanishing from sight, only to be replaced by different designs. It was as if all the alchemical knowledge within Ed had been given shape. He was its vessel and conduit, and it shaped him with its touch. Bright eyes were clamped tightly shut, and Roy did not miss the crystal glimmer of tears caught behind Ed's lashes. Whatever was happening, it was painful, and Ed could not even find the strength to reassure them. Al's hands were brushing against his brother's forehead as he called out again and again, but it did no good. A rasping, rattling breath from Ed made Roy tense, expecting the decimating cough and knowing what it meant. Perhaps the alchemy had not aimed to weaken Ed, but whatever had happened, it had given the gate the chance it needed to lash out. The broken, pained lines on Ed's face told the story. It was a battle no one could see or experience except him, but the consequences could affect everyone. If, when Ed opened his eyes, it was the gate behind that veil of gold, everything was lost. Even killing Ed would not stop it. He would fight with everything he had, but Roy was not sure that was enough anymore. Ed's mind in alchemy may be stronger than ever, but his body was riding the crest of a wave that had to break eventually. And Roy was not sure if there would be anything left in its wake. He shifted his hands, moving his muscles slowly so that they were crossed over Ed's chest, embracing him from behind. He could feel the bunch and twist of Ed's muscles and every fluttering, rough-edged breath. Without hesitation, Roy pressed his cheek to Ed's temple, feeling the sharp, sudden bite of fever and slick sweat. Wherever Ed was right now, it was not here. "Stay with me," he whispered, at a loss for anything else that could call Ed home to him. "Stay with me. Come on, Ed. You're stronger than this. Please." Gently, he tightened his grip, trying to give Ed an anchor to the present. The seconds seemed like hours before Ed went slack, slumping back against Roy's chest as he let out a shuddering, unimpeded breath. His face was pale, with bright flags of color riding high on his cheekbones. It made the eerie spin of the arrays all the more stark and obvious, alarming in their clarity. "I'm all right," he whispered, his voice parched as if he had been screaming, even though no sound had passed his lips. "Just too much."
"Too much what?"
Al asked, as Roy slowly released Ed, making sure he could carry his own weight before easing back half a step. That was as far away as he could bring himself to be. The need to stay glued to Ed's side seemed to grow by the minute, and he felt his heart clench as Ed swayed unsteadily. "Alchemy. It's like being hit in the head by a fucking battering ram." "Sir!" Hawkeye's voice was soft and heavy with warning, and Roy looked over at her, seeing her head cocked to one side as she listened. Taking her cue, he focused on the silence of the city, trying to make out what Riza had heard. A harsh groan, like that of thin ice breaking apart, echoed through the streets. It was a solitary sound, making the air shudder with its weight as it grew into a rumble and a plume of dust rose a few blocks away. Stone on stone heralded the collapse of an ancient home, and Roy felt the ground tremble with soft echoes of its force. Silence resumed for a few heartbeats before the noise began again, creaking like a fleet of galleons at full sail. More buildings fell, bringing their neighbors down with them. A sharper noise made Roy look at the palace, and he cringed as he saw one wall buckle and slump, spilling the ancient terracotta tiles down onto the houses far below. A hiss, soft and sibilant, rose above the moans and roars of breaking rock, and Roy shifted his gaze to the distant cliffs. Gold poured over their lips, a hushing, ringing wave of color that looked like nothing he had seen before. It fell in torrents, as if a dam had broken and molten wealth poured forth. It took him a moment to realize that it was sand catching the sun's light and sparkling like jewels as it poured into the valley that held the sunken city. Ed cursed, taking a few steps backwards before turning away. "We need to get out of here." "What's happening?" Al asked, flinching as the ancient altar crumbled into dust. "Look at the ground. Look what's missing." Roy glanced down, staring at the blank stone uncomprehendingly before the truth dawned. The array that had been used to build the gate was gone, wiped clean as if it had never been carved in the first place. Instantly, he recognized the change in the quality of the air. It was no longer simply hot and thirsty. It was bone dry, like the atmosphere in a long disused tomb. The subtle, steady feeling of ancient power was gone, leaving Babylon exposed to the weight of the years that pressed down upon it. "The only thing holding this place together was the alchemy," Ed called over his shoulder, breaking into an unsteady run. "Now that it's gone, the whole damn city is falling apart." One of the ruins closest to the square crumbled, filling the air with flying debris and choking dust. They needed no further urging, and Roy broke into a sprint, catching up and keeping pace with Ed, as Al and Riza's clattering footsteps followed not far behind. The susurrus of the sand increased, and he looked back towards the cliffs and the solid wall of falling gold. Babylon was not just turning to dust. The desert was reclaiming it, sealing the remains of the dead city in its obscurity. They were the first people to set foot in Babylon for thousands of years, and now they would be the last. The sharp, heavy smack of a collapsing lintel on the dusty ground made him veer to one side, ducking desperately as a slab of stone came crashing down. Babylon had been built to withstand the rasping hush of the desert, and the falling walls could crush a man before he had the chance to scream. Noise racked the city, trembling with the rough clamor of collapsing masonry as more rubble cascaded down, blocking the road ahead. "This way!" Ed yelled, grabbing his hand and yanking him along a wider street, trusting the others to follow. Yellow dust filled the air, making every breath a painful rasp. Roy could hardly see his hand in front of his face as he stumbled blindly, half pulled along by Ed's fierce grasp. There was no time to stop and look behind them, no time to assess how much danger they were in. All he could do was put his head down and concentrate every piece of his will on following Ed's lead and getting out of here alive. Babylon was already a grave for thousands. He did not want to be one of them. Eventually, he realized that he could hear the sound of their footsteps again, and the haze was starting to thin as the dust settled. Slowly, silence settled over the valley once more, punctuated by the occasional rumble of stone and whisper of sand. The desert was everywhere, underfoot and coating his lips with its salty grit. Nearer the cliffs, the massive waves of the dunes reigned supreme. The wind already whipped their peaks, making the sand hum eerily. Ed slithered to a halt, and Roy stumbled to a stop beside him, waiting for Hawkeye and Al to catch up as he looked around at all that remained of Babylon. A few pieces of rock cropped out from the sand like an ocean's reef, and only the plaza with the fountain at its center remained marginally unscathed. Even here, sand filled the bowl, and time would ensure that soon it too would be lost. There was no water, no plants, no hum of insects. It was as if the millennia had hovered over the city like an executioner's axe. Now, at last, the blade had fallen, and the city could rest in peace. Come on, there's nothing else we need here.
But you didn't even get a good look at the array, Al pointed out to his brother, panting with the exertion and the heat. You couldn't see it all from where we were standing.
I didn't need to see it, Ed muttered, looking back across the wreckage of the city, his eyes narrowed against the glare of the sun. The alchemy came to me.
Will it do any good? Roy asked, pressing a hand to the stitches in his side. The wound would never heal at this rate. Can you change it enough to rebuild the gate?
Ed shrugged, turning away with a fractional shake of his head that made his braid swing. I don't know, but I've got to try. Al, can you get that book that we were reading back at the house? I think I'm going to need it.
It's back at the office. You have an idea?
A weak smile tugged at Ed's lips, and Roy could see the sheer weight of the younger man's weariness bearing down upon him.
Maybe, he said quietly. Whatever happens, I better come up with something fast. I get the feeling we're already on borrowed time.
He stepped through the waiting portal, leaving the others to follow. Roy was the last one, and he let his eyes drift across Babylon's ruins. Once this place had been brimming with life, and, in the space of a night, everything had changed. Most people did not believe in such things. They refused to acknowledge that the balance of fate could hang in a day, an hour, a second. They could not comprehend how their very existence could come down to one person. There were very few people in whose hands he would willingly place his life. But Ed was one of them. He did not know the meaning of surrender or defeat, and Roy knew that Ed would fight until the last breath. It was like a bullet to the heart to think that may very well be the case. Squaring his shoulders, he stepped back through into the papery bustle of the office. Roy felt the surge and dwindle of alchemy behind him as Ed closed down the array, restoring the plaster to its former bland glory. Everyone was busy, even those who had nothing to do with the military. Winry was working on something tiny, barely daring to breathe as she shone a dazzling light onto the surface of the desk. Russell was reading the piece of paper Ed had given her, one eyebrow raised in curiosity, as Fletcher craned his neck to get a better look at what held his brother's interest. Roy's eyes narrowed when he noticed a few grains of sand on Russell's shirt, and he met Havoc's eye. Jean's arms were crossed, and his face set into a scowl. He'd bet anything that Russell had tried to follow them through the array. Perhaps he had even made it a little way. But it seemed that Havoc had dragged him back before the city had folded like a house of cards. The last thing Roy needed was the loss of a civilian life in the midst of some inexplicable alchemy. Hughes caught his eye and nodded at the clock.
Good timing. Stodd's expecting you in 5 minutes. Did you get what you needed?
Sort of, Roy replied, brushing glassy grains from his uniform and hair.
Even if we didn't, there's nothing left to go back to. Just give Ed whatever help he needs. I'll make sure we have the freedom to get out of here. I'd rather meet Carmine out in the city than within the army compound.
Why? At least there's plenty of backup.
You mean there's plenty of fuel for her to use. A bullet won't stop her, but at least if we can keep her from pulling in the energy from other people, we stand a faint chance of keeping her under control. Better to come up against her in an empty street than on a crowded parade ground.
Straightening his jacket, Roy strode out of the door, forcing himself not to look back and check on Ed. They needed the space to do what they both did best. Ed needed to be immersed in this alchemy. It was probably the most important array he would ever create, and he had very little time in which to get it right. There was nothing Roy could do to help with the alchemy itself. Better that he settled into his true role and started removing the obstacles in Ed's path before they became an issue. He needed to pull strings. This was not about calling in an owed favor or two. This was about making the general see the truth through Mustang's eyes.
and Stott was notoriously short-sighted, metaphorically speaking. He was a man of military breeding, content with his place in the ranks. He took pride in the perfection of his men. Discipline was the key, and convincing him that some rules were meant to be broken was a true challenge. Still, he had to try. It was best not to keep Stott waiting. He marched as quickly as was presentable along the corridors, stopping outside the broad oak doors that sheltered the general's office from the rest of the building. His firm knock was answered with a rough bark of admittance, and he stepped smoothly across the threshold before closing the doors and shutting out the rest of the world. Stott's office was full of subtle wealth. Everywhere Roy looked, there were personal touches that spoke of a man who spent a great deal of time behind the huge inlaid desk. This large room had been made a second home, and one wall was made up of arched windows, showing a view across Central, towards the rural edge of the metropolis. Now that vista was obscured by the ferocious rain, and, even though dawn had crested the horizon some time ago, it was still dark. Choking clouds marched across the city, keeping the world in perpetual twilight. He gave a quick salute, textbook perfect, and knew that the general was already looking over his appearance and seeing everything Roy wanted to show. A perfectly immaculate appearance was not an option, and he was sure to let just enough strain and harassment show on his face. Here he was a subordinate, requesting the flexibility required to do his job to the usual impeccable standard. In front of Stott, he could let through a hint of frustrated helplessness, carefully modulated, of course. Sharp eyes focused on Roy's face, and he thought he saw a faint flicker of amused understanding on the old man's features, as if he had secretly expected something like this. His broad shoulders squared beneath his uniform jacket, as he gave a calm nod of acknowledgement before looking at some documents on his desk. "Problems, Brigadier General Mustang?" he growled, his booming voice more controlled within the confines of Central Command. "I'm sorry to bother you, General," Roy replied, keeping his voice firm and strong. There was no point in platitudes. Strott loathed any form of compliment and would decline him out of spite if Roy tried to appeal to the man's vanity. "I would like to request that my team be allowed into the city to help with the relief efforts." The general's soft grunt was not one of surprise, and Roy watched the older man carefully, trying to read his body language. His stocky frame made a big enough canvas for his emotions, but the general was keeping himself under tight control. He was not about to give anything away. "Hakuro has ordered that all soldiers remain in the command building. You would have me go against the commands of the Führer, Mustang? Why ask? You normally act first, taking a gamble that the situation will work in your favor, and seek permission after the fact. What is so different this time?" It was instinctive to deny Stott's assessment, but he could see that would be a mistake. If this was a poker game, then the general would be holding all the cards, and all Roy had was a hollow bluff. "Sir," he began, choosing each word with incredible care, "the Führer is a man under a great deal of strain, and his order for the troops to remain in the compound may be ideal from a military perspective, but the people of Central will find reassurance in having soldiers present on the street, particularly if the earthquakes continue." He ran over the sentence in his mind, confident that there was nothing that could be considered insubordinate. He may believe Hakuro was an utter fool, but he did not dare voice such an opinion. Even if Stott was as unimpressed by the Führer as Roy believed, there was no guarantee that his office was a secure place to discuss such things. The general hesitated, his eyes moving to a silver-framed photograph on his desk. It was of his son, daughter-in-law, and new grandson, about 6 months old by now. And as much as Roy hated to acknowledge it, it paid to know a superior officer's weaknesses. To Stott, kin was everything. It was more than just blood and heritage. Despite his gruff exterior, the man was besotted with all of his family, and Roy knew that he was thinking of their fear at the earthquakes and his own concern over their well-being.
Leather creaked as the general sank into his chair, his lined face pensive as he thought over what Roy had said. On the surface of it, he was simply an officer under Stott's command expressing his concern. Roy had made sure that anyone listening would have heard nothing more than that. But Stott was not an idiot. Every report Roy ever wrote to his superior was a masterpiece in guile and misdirection, and he had a sinking feeling that the older man saw through it all anyway. Now, standing right in front of him, Roy knew that the general had picked up on the faint signs of urgency in his subordinate's posture. With a nod, the general picked up his pen and began to write, speaking at the same time.
"The Fuhrer's orders are concrete, Mustang. He is the head of the military for a reason, and I cannot undermine his authority. You and your men are to stay within the command building until alternative orders are received. You are not to attempt any form of independent action that, regardless of your good intentions, may be interpreted as mutinous or disobedient."
He glanced up and, to Roy's surprise, winked.
"I hope I have made myself bloody clear."
He jabbed the pen at the paper before handing it to Roy, who read through the spidery scrawl quickly.
"Get to it. I'm not fool enough to think that you are going into the city to comfort distraught citizens, but nor will I pretend that I understand the extent of the threat that we are under. My information states that it is something to do with alchemy, and that you and your men are in the thick of it. You are good at emerging from the mire of catastrophe as a hero. Do not let me down. Should you fail, the consequences will be on your head and may well cost you your life, not to mention your career. I cannot give you anything more than the men already under your command, but I imagine that they will stay loyal to you until the end and are not necessarily strangers to bending the orders they are given. I will ensure that the sentries at the south gate are absent for 10 minutes at 8 in the morning. Leave unseen. A means to an end, Mustang. Make sure that your actions can be justified once the outcome has been reached. I would not want to see a promising officer such as yourself lost to the Fuhrer's idiocy."
A quick glance at the clock told him that they would leave in a little under 45 minutes. Roy smiled, giving a sharp nod of understanding as he folded the paper in his hands. It seemed that Stott was also unsure of who might be listening to the comings and goings of his office. He voiced an order that would ensure his position was free from threat should Roy be found guilty of disobedience, but his written message made it clear that he had his doubts about the Fuhrer's commands.
"I see, General."
Roy's words drowned out the click of his fingers and the greedy crackle of flame as it consumed Stott's missive. Gray flakes dropped into the ashtray on the desk, like grubby snow, and the man sniffed at the flash of Roy's alchemy.
"Very well, then. You are dismissed."
Roy saluted again, turning neatly and marching out. Easing back through the busy corridors, he slipped into the office, meeting Hughes's questioning gaze with a nod.
"We are getting out of here in 40 minutes, he said calmly. "Be ready for a fight. Everyone who can shoot a gun, make sure you're armed and that you have plenty of ammunition."
Winry made a soft, whimpering noise, glancing up at Ed and murmuring, "I don't think I can have this ready in less than an hour. It's really intricate work. What will happen if I get something wrong?"
"It'll blow up," Ed said flatly, not even looking up from the paper he was scribbling theories onto. "Just try, okay?"
Roy watched the young woman bite her lip and turned over the gold band in her hands, trailing her fingers over its smooth surface as she tried to calm herself. He recognized it as the ring that Ed had pulled off one of Carmine's thugs, and, as he watched, Winry picked up a small, sharp tool and focused, copying another tiny array onto the inner surface. Alex Armstrong stood at Ed's side, reading the hasty suppositions and looking over the rough sketches with wary amazement. His hands were clasped neatly behind his back, but Roy could see that Armstrong's protective instinct was taking hold. The arrays taking shape on the page worried him, and when Alex looked up, his eyes were filled with doubt.
"Lieutenant Colonel Hughes has briefed me on the situation, sir," he stated, his booming voice jerking Russell and Fletcher from their watchful interest in Ed's alchemy. Alas, he was unable to explain my role in the proceedings.
It's the same as the rest of us, Alex. People will try and stop Ed performing that alchemy. We need to make sure we can give him the chance he needs.
I have been informed about the despicable woman and her motives, but I had not thought you had found her.
We don't need to know where she is, Ed muttered, sweeping strands of hair out of his face and scowling at the paper in front of him. If she doesn't find us before I activate this, then she'll come running as soon as the array goes off.
He shook his head and looked up, staring sightlessly out of the window.
She's on the move anyway. I can feel it. If Carmine fights with any of you, whether you're an alchemist or not, she'll kill you. She won't even blink doing it. If you want to help me, then deal with her thugs and don't get into trouble. Leave her to me.
Ed. Roy's voice died in his throat when Ed's eyes snapped to his, focused and fierce.
You'll be busy with her creatures. Besides, she'll try to use as many of you as possible for fuel. Don't fall into her hands, any of you. If you do, you might as well point a fucking gun at my head and pull the trigger. Her main aim is going to be stopping me, and if this is going to stand a chance of working, I need to be in the array with her.
It doesn't matter anyway, Russell pointed out, crossing his arms. All the arrays you've drawn so far could never be activated. I don't care how much of a genius you are, you don't have the strength it takes to get the alchemy going.
He shifted uncomfortably at the look on Ed's face and glanced towards Roy, suddenly uncertain.
Do you?
I will, Ed said quietly, screwing up the paper in his automail hand and pitching it into the bin. As soon as I start, though, there'll be no going back. If I try and reverse it... He trailed off with a shrug. It just won't be possible, that's all. Everyone was silent, filled with the same buzzing tension and anxiety. It felt as if the moment for choice had passed. Now they were caught up in the current of events, and there was no going back. An element of inevitability choked the air, as if the future was somehow out of their hands. They could only fight with everything they had and hope that, in the end, fate was on their side. It was a feeling that Roy loathed, and he scowled at the clock before saying, "We leave shortly. Be ready." Without bothering to wait for a reply, he walked into his inner office, opening the desk drawer and pulling out a spare pair of gloves. The arrays were stark and unfaded against the dazzling white cloth, and he quickly stripped off the ones he was wearing, tucking them into his pocket just in case. There was no difference between the two pairs except for the state of wear. He did not want his gloves to fail at a critical moment. It would be hard enough to create a spark in the rain anyway. Even in a deluge like this, it was possible for a fire alchemist to perform. It was simply a lot more difficult. The gases that made water were flammable, but unpredictable. Pockets of highly concentrated hydrogen could be explosive and create massive temperature differences in the flame. It lent an unpredictability to his alchemy, and he always tried to avoid relying on it too heavily in wet conditions. This time, though, there would be no choice. Each of them would have to give this their all. A moment of hesitancy or weakness could spell the end of their attempt, and close the book of history on Amstris for good. Roy walked to the window, pressing his forehead to the cold glass as he looked out across the parade ground. His body was trembling with pent-up emotion. Fear and worry were edged with the subtle thrill of adrenaline. He looked into the future, and all he could see was pain. Even if they won, there would probably not be any joy in the victory. The chances of Ed surviving were incredibly slim, and yet he clung to those pathetic odds because his life depended on it. He had been right to fear starting a relationship with Ed, for all the wrong reasons. He had never realized that, in a few short days, Ed would own him so utterly. Now, without him, Roy knew that he could no longer make sense in this world. He would be like pieces of a broken mirror, reflecting a shattered man that no one could mend. He had to trust Ed, because he held Roy cradled in his mismatched hands. Without them, there was nothing left to keep Roy on his feet, nothing to keep him moving forward.
Without Ed, there was nothing but guilt driving him onward to the Führership, and, like the gate, such foundations could only lead to disaster. There had to be something more to his life if he was going to make it to the top, and his heart had decided that Ed was what it needed to keep him going. If he was gone, then there would be no fire left in Roy. He would fade away to nothing but the cold, dusty ash, dead and useless. A click from the door as it closed permeated his thoughts, and someone touched his waist, sliding their arms around him until he was wrapped in an uneven circle. Ed pressed his face between Roy's shoulder blades, giving a soft sound of disappointment as Roy pulled away and turned before tugging Ed into his chest. They stood in silence, their hearts beating steadily together as Ed relaxed, nuzzling up into the curve of Roy's neck. It felt too right, too perfect to last. It made a sick kind of sense that, now that Roy had finally found the one person he could entrust with all his darkness and burning light, the world conspired to take them away. He tightened his arms, trying to fit everything into one quick embrace, but even if he had the rest of his life to show Ed how he felt, it would never be enough. Gently, he cupped Ed's chin, bending to brush a kiss against his slightly parted lips. His heart panged painfully as Ed returned it, keeping passion on a tight rein as he curled his fingers in the hair at the nape of Roy's neck, holding him close. It was painfully tender, and Roy knew how quickly and easily Ed communicated with his body. This was not a kiss of lust or heat. It was too soft and deep for that. It was gentle and protective, its fierce need held in check. It said so much, but the one thing Roy heard loud and clear was, "Goodbye." His heart hurt, squeezed hard and breaking already beneath his ribs. He tightened his grip on Ed as if he could hold on to him forever, and tried to turn his body deaf to what Ed was telling him. What could he say? What could he do to make Ed stay with him? That was what he wanted. Not just a day, a week, a month, but forever. He should have known that this would go beyond lust, beyond sex and passion, and into far more dangerous territory. Softly breaking the kiss, he ran his nose along the side of Ed's, breathing in the scent of him and trying to burn this moment into his memory forever, in case it was all he ever had. His voice was stuck in his throat, swollen with words that he was both desperate and afraid to say. He could hear the clock ticking on the wall, slicing off the seconds, but he did not dare to look at its face. It would only tell him that it was time to leave all this behind. "We have to go," Ed murmured quietly, dropping his forehead to Roy's shoulder as if he could not bear to look at him and say those words. "You ready?" "No," Roy's heart screamed, but he gave a slow nod, closing his eyes and taking in one last deep breath of Ed before stepping away. They stood a foot apart, both looking at each other as if they had something else to say, but there was nothing other than silence. Finally, Ed just gave a sad smile and jerked his head toward the door. "Come on, let's get this over with." "Ed..." Roy swallowed, his voice already sounding hoarse and broken. He tried to find his courage, but there was none left to spare to give voice to the way he felt. Instead, he sighed and murmured, "Please be careful." A gold eyebrow rose a fraction, and there was a flicker of happy emotion on Ed's features, as if he had heard the unspoken, "I love you." His smile was small, but genuine and pure, as he cocked his head to one side before saying, "You too." Together they walked towards the door, and Roy tried to make sure all of his vulnerability was hidden. There was no room for feelings at a time like this, no matter how hard it screamed to be known. Emotion, hot and torrid, could all too easily lead to the chill of death. It was better to remain logical and distanced, and emerge with his life intact. He just hoped he had the strength to let Ed do what had to be done, and prayed that somehow, when this was over, he would have the chance to tell Ed how he felt in so many words. The office was brimming with apprehension, and everyone looked up as Roy stepped across the threshold, waiting for the word to get moving.
Any non-military personnel need to find a safe place to stay. That means you three.
He looked pointedly at Winry and the Tringhams. We'll lead you out of here. After that, you're to go straight to Gracia Hughes. She'll look after you for the time being. Stay put until someone comes to get you.
Wait, Al's not in the military, Russell argued. If it's alchemists you need, then both Fletcher and I know what we're doing. Besides, he gestured to Winry, she's still working on this thing for Ed.
Don't worry about it, Winry, Ed said quietly. I'll think of another way.
Like hell you will, Winry snapped. I just need another 10 minutes. As long as I've got light, I can keep working. Anyway, from the sounds of it, you're going to mess up my automail again. You'll need me to fix it.
Her jaw was set in a stubborn line, as if she were daring Ed to argue.
We don't have time for this, Mustang said firmly, a hint of a snap behind his voice. Do what you're told or I'll have you thrown in the cells. Alphonse is part of the military and has been for years.
That last part was not technically true, but for all her flash and fire, Winry had nothing on Al when it came to determination. It was unthinkable to keep the younger Elric away, and Roy knew to choose his battles. With a scowl, Winry started to collect up her tools, but Roy did not miss the sharp, meaningful look she shot at Russell. They were planning something, and he cursed under his breath, knowing he could not spare anyone to escort them to safety. In the end, they were both much older than Ed had been when he had thrown himself straight into the path of danger. If their choice was to face the threat rather than find safety, then so be it. He was powerless to stop them.
Sir, Hawkeye said softly, we're running out of time.
The clock was already ticking inexorably towards 8, and Roy nodded, thinking carefully. They had to get to the southern exit undetected, and if they moved in a large group, they were bound to cause comment. With the halls as crowded as they were, then the chances of them being spotted were high. Low-ranking soldiers were not a problem, but if he came across someone of his status or higher, then there would be difficult questions to answer.
Split up, he said carefully. Armstrong, take Winry and the Tringhams. Thalman, Fury, and Breida, you're with Hughes. The rest of you are with me. We'll leave separately. Get to the south doors and out. Avoid anyone of higher rank than a major. Make an excuse for your movements if you have no other choice. We'll meet up at the cemetery gates. We'll be out of sight of the sentries there.
And after that? Hughes asked, watching Roy sharply.
We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. For now, let's concentrate on getting out of Central Command.
Roy watched the clock as if it fascinated him, mourning the passage of each precious minute. Armstrong left first, and Hughes led his small group out a few minutes later. After he felt that they had been given enough time to get away, Roy pulled open the door and stepped into the corridor wordlessly, leaving the others to follow. He felt conspicuous and out of place, as if guilt and anxiety were written all across his features. Around them, soldiers bustled one way and the other, forcing him to weave through the crowd. Roy walked at his usual pace. If he looked purposeful, then the chances were that no one would dare to interrupt and ask difficult questions. At least their haste did not seem out of place. Every man and woman moved with purpose and speed. It made it much easier to remain inconspicuous. Even so, they were forced to turn away from the main corridors by the presence of generals and other high-ranking officials. Roy muttered a curse under his breath, knowing that they were hemorrhaging time with every detour. More than once, he saw a soldier glance their way with open curiosity. He kept expecting someone to challenge them and demand to know where they were going. Finally, they reached the south exit, and Roy smiled as Havoc let out a deep sigh of relief. Everyone seemed to relax, breathing easier as they pushed open the doors and were greeted by the hiss of rain and the scent of fresh air. Water flowed down the steps and pooled on the ground, making stealth impossible as they splashed through the puddles in haste. There were no sentries to block their way, but they did their best to keep to the gloom. Many of the officers' rooms overlooked this part of the grounds, and the last thing they needed was to be chased through central streets by someone who happened to glance out their window at the opportune moment.
The storm had driven Central into submission, and the city was eerily quiet. Once or twice a police car siren would ring in the distance, but there were no other cars or pedestrians. It was as dead as Babylon, and Roy felt a shudder race through him at the disturbing parallel. Dawn had broken about an hour ago, but the world was a dusky place, bleached by the rain. Earthquakes had affected the streetlights, and they guttered and choked in the gloom. A strong wind soughed in the trees as they hurried along the pavement, and Roy heard the clang and rattle of the cemetery gate long before it came into view. Rounding the corner, he hesitated, slowing his stride as he saw the others standing by the entrance. Although they were soaked through to the skin, they seemed to have made no effort to find any kind of shelter. Instead, they peered through the iron bars, pale-faced and grim at the scene beyond.
"Such desecration," Alex murmured as Roy approached.
He shifted his gaze to take in what was left of the graveyard and felt his stomach drop, cold and hollow. The once smooth green lawns had been churned to mud, and the headstones lay toppled like broken teeth. An array had been clawed into the ground in front of the gate. He realized that it had been used to disturb the graves simultaneously. None of them were left intact, and Roy could see the gleam of bright white bone among the soil. He swallowed tightly, noticing the footprints that scuffed at the mud. They showed an unsteady stride, overlapping again and again as if dozens of people had milled about, confused. Eventually, they seemed to set off in a straight line over the devastated ground, stopping for nothing that got in their way.
"Carmine?"
he asked Ed quietly, closing his eyes in disbelief when the younger man nodded.
"Shit, there were over 1,000 people buried in there. If she's brought them all back."
"That's an army," Havoc said, his voice trembling. "We can't fight that!" Ed reached out, ignoring the pained squeak of the gate's hinges as he pulled it open, and strode through. He glanced briefly at the array near the entrance before turning away, peering through the downpour for something else. His eyes were intent on the rain-smattered ground, and it took him a few minutes to find what he was looking for. When he did, he bent down, brushing the muck free from a separate, smaller array. Roy eased through the gate and walked over to look over his shoulder, aware that Al was doing the same. The others lingered back at the entrance, unwilling to set foot within the perimeter of the desecrated cemetery.
"What have you found?" Al asked quietly, glancing around uncertainly as the wind made the tree branches clatter and groan.
Ed pointed out the circles in the muck. "Carmine did this recently and in a hurry. She was here less than an hour ago." He traced a finger over the curve of the array, frowning at the components. "She couldn't have raised everyone from those graves with this. It wouldn't be strong enough to hold together and move a skeleton. If she's reanimated any more corpses, then they've only been dead a few months."
"That could still be nearly 100,
Roy murmured, squinting into the distance as he tried to make out any moving figures amidst the heaps of upturned earth.
"Better than 1,000, though."
Ed brushed the mud off his hand, straightening up and following the trail of footsteps. It was impossible to count them, but the line of the thick path was clear. "They're heading towards the river." Roy raised an eyebrow, thinking of the wealthy residents and their reactions to shambling corpses in military uniform.
"Why? You would think that she would be looking for you, not going in the opposite direction."
"Fuck knows," Ed replied, glancing back at the others who still hovered by the fence, waiting. "Maybe if we follow them, we'll find out." Ed's hiss of pain made Roy look at him in surprise. He was snatching at something around his neck, pulling a glittering pendant free from the confines of his t-shirt as if it burned. The silver five-pointed star glowed a fierce crimson, pitching Ed's face into ruddy light as he stared at it before looking at the trail Carmine's creatures had left in their wake. Sick realization dawned across his face, and he tightened his automail hand around the necklace and snapped the chain free. It was the necklace he had tied into the defenses at Ryder's.
He had designed it specifically to tell him if the place was under any kind of attack. Now it glowed balefully in the murky air, spitting and sparking as the rain touched its surface. On the horizon, a flash and crackle of alchemy speared the air, and Roy did not need to give the order to run as they all broke into a sprint, leaving the gate to clang close behind them. Everyone forgot their hesitance over the ruined graves as they were caught in the clutches of urgency, scrambling over the uneven ground as they made their way towards the street. Their clattering footsteps bounced back and forth as they finally reached the pavement and raced down the road. Roy knew he should have done something more to keep Winry and the Tringhams safe, but it was too late now. They were as much a part of this as the rest of them. Roy's heart was thrumming with exertion and fear, and he forced himself to concentrate on where he was putting his feet. The rain caught in his hair and ran down his face, dragging at his uniform with every step. He struggled on, keeping pace with Ed's uneven stride. No one spoke. The time for words had passed. Carmine's flickering power was a call to war, and they had no choice but to answer.